songs we want to sing with them. They learn the verses. They're a piece of cake. Being a parent is tough. And a lot of what we do here in children's ministries is to serve the parent. Because we get the kids an hour and a half, maybe 3 hours a week, get all crazy and come back Wednesday. It could be up to five and a half hours a week that we get them. And you get them all the rest of the time. So you are the secret weapon. You are the most powerful person in the life of your child, and you will be until after you're gone. You will still be the most powerful person in the life of your child. So we are committed, certainly, to taking care of your kids and teaching them all the stuff that you would expect them to learn at church. But we're committed to arming you to be the parent who is guiding your own child toward becoming a disciple of Christ. And because it's totally easy, it's completely linear, and if you follow the 12 steps, you will hit it on the nose every time. And so, no, it's not like that at all, depending upon your kid. Your second kid is totally different from your first. Have you noticed that? So when you were the perfect parent until you gave birth to the second, and you felt like, oh, we went too far. But so even your children change, and the ones that you have, they will change on you. Those little temperaments will totally change. Some of them will even out, and you'll be so pleased that you did so well. And others will, you know, grow fangs, and you'll wonder, you know, it's always the dad's fault, by the way. So it comes through his side of the family always. So we are committed to helping you through this difficult, changing, but really fantastic journey. But you do need to be limber. You do need to be ready to change direction at a moment's notice. Humility would be fabulous, because everything you think you know is going to work sometimes and not work other times. And then just navigating other parents might be helpful to know. So we are we have a blog, theparentingpathway.org. is where we have a constant blog flow going. We have articles being posted. We have links being posted. There's stuff going up a couple, three times a week typically. And so that's our way. And you can converse back to us through this. And later this month, on October 25th, on the back of your flyer here, Kelly is doing this?
Yeah.
Kelly Wilkinson is the... She's like the principal of our preschool that we have going on here. And she will be doing this straight talk on getting connected without Wi-Fi. And she's going to talk about it. It's going to be less technical. It's really more relationship stuff. So if I don't want you to come get disappointed, because we'll turn the Wi-Fi off when she speaks, but you'll understand. So Kelly is an expert in her field. And she's dealing with those preschoolers all the time, and she would reiterate that it's more difficult being a parent than being a principal to a preschooler. So she's got stuff for you. We shouldn't be able to have K, but we do. And who was here one of the previous times that we've had her? All right, so this is the fan club. So you already know. So this is she just happens to live close enough. She just happens to really have no bar for saying no to me. So she just says yes. And we love having her here, and I want to get her up here so she can have the whole time. So Kay Wima, come on down.
That's funny. You are so funny. They're lucky to have you. Okay, so I'm Kay. I'm like a bag lady, because I have, okay. Wow. If only it did that at home. Then everybody would know when I entered the room, and they'd be like, she's there. Shh, be quiet. I'm just moving it down here, because it's a little more comfy.
The further forward you go, the more that will happen.
Oh, really? I do this so that I'm not like...
There's a force field right here.
It's like the cone of silence?
Yes.
Okay, that's so funny. You're right. So I do need to stand up there, don't I?
That would be, and they want to see you.
Okay, well, do you want me back up there? Yes. All right. All right, but I do have my goodies down there. So when Carol Merrill comes, I just feel, y'all are so nice to always be looking up to me. No one looks up to me in my house. All right, so anyway, did it come on? Are we going on? All right, I'm Kay, and I do live here, and I've got, just to give you a little bit about me, I've got 5 kids, and so the oldest right now is about to be 19. He is a freshman in college, and he's the one that calluses my knees, not because he gets into trouble, but just because his heart was hurt several years ago, and it's very hard to get a kid back whose heart is hurt. But the Lord doesn't work in like 3-month increments. He works in like 7-year, 40-year. So we're taking that perspective. And then I have a 17-year-old that's a junior. Are there any like high school people? Is it the junior year? The junior year is just so, what is up with that? And it's like, the junior year, you know? And so they start out like dying, you know? And then I have a freshman. That's equally as fun. And then I have a 7th grader. I mean, is this sounding fun to y'all? I was saying, was I telling y'all about the? A friend told me the other day, your hair is so light, and she goes, well, where did you get it done? And I was like, oh, I didn't get it done. I got it done in the passenger seat of my car because I have 2 student drivers right now. And I'm like, I sit there, I'm like, oh, you know, and you're like, because no one tells you about student driving. It is absolutely the worst. You know all about terrible 2s, but let me just say, when they get behind the wheel of the car, there is nothing like it. It's horrifying. And you feel the gray. Like Central Expressway the other day, I was like, you know, and I, if you see the car, it's like, oh, and then the daughter's like, oh, are you mad at me? And I'm sitting there going, no. And she's like, but you just gasped. I didn't do anything. And I'm like, I was coughing. It's horrible. And then I have an 8-year-old. And so someone loves me in my house. And I love that child. He runs out of the house when I leave, still to this day, and waves at me and says, I love you, Mom. I love you. And he's like, I love you more than anything. I love you more than anyone. And he's like, except God. I don't love you more than God does. And he's like, okay, see ya. And then he goes back in. And I've recorded it on my phone so that I have it. I'm not kidding. I was like, I need to record this and watch it during the day. And I'm like, someone likes me. Someone cares. Because nobody else does. Okay, so that's our family. A couple of years ago, I accidentally got into writing. I didn't really mean to. It all started because I was mad at my children because I felt like they were looking to me to do everything for them, and I'd had it. And so I put everything on their plate. And when I did it, I started a blog. I started the blog because I wanted a place for mothers of adolescents and teens to be able to go. I loved MOPS. MOPS was really great for me. And I hit those teenage years, and I was like, where is it? Because this is worse than that was. And I was like, let's get, you know, it's the parenting blog. It's so good because you need it. And you can be in a carpool line and look at a parenting something. And believe it or not, it really wasn't around so much then. And so when I did, I was like, well, there's got to be something funny to put on it. And then my kids left everything out one morning and every bed unmade. And lo and behold, a little something entered their life called an experiment to rid our home of youth entitlement. And a book came out of it in the most interesting of ways. And so I started speaking different places. And when the publisher asked me to write another book, I laughed and I was like, that's funny because you've forgotten I don't do this. And then they said, what's the elephant in the room everywhere you go? And I was like, this very strange competition, you know, it's weird. It's like you expect competition pretty much everywhere in life. You start out and, you know, you experience it when you're 7 on the playground. And, you know, who's going to be Red Rover? Who's it? And so you know that when you're not it, you truly are the loser. And there goes the pecking order. But it's like part of life, you know. And then you expect it in sports and you expect it in so many realms of life, even at the office, you know. It's like there's the one-upmanship. But when I became a parent, and I I started watching my friends race to go get into the line to sign their child up for Mother's Day out at 3 a.m, and they wouldn't tell anybody else because they didn't want their other friends getting in line at 3 a.m. and might take their spot. It was like, what? I was blindsided. I was like, wait, these are our children. Aren't we friends? Don't we like each other? And I'm like, I had no idea carpool was a competition and that there was a good one, you know, and that my kid isn't in it. And it was like, whoa. And then it just kept going. And it floored me. And people are so mean and hateful about it. Like, you could have siblings that would, like, be against each other, but not on the outside. It's only on the inside and on the hush-hush and the low-down so they nobody knows. And I thought it was so strange. And that was just, like, in the friend stuff. That wasn't even all the stuff that was going on in society. And everywhere I went, it would be like, well, how do we turn down the competition? Because so much of the entitlement seems to be driven by that, like this comparison stuff. Because as I started to back up, it was like, well, the competition is one thing, but the common theme in it all is comparison. Like me looking at you and having what you do define my self-worth, whether I'm higher or lower. And it's everywhere. And as soon, they were like, yeah, that's a good topic, which I've now learned. Don't write a book off a topic. Because especially something like comparison, because everybody comes at it differently. And for example, I had a friend of mine say to me, I'm so sorry you deal with comparison. And it was sort of like, I'm so sorry that you deal with that. And I was like, whoa. I was sitting there going, oh, I thought everyone did. And I was like, man, you should be sorry for me. And I'm like, I'm pathetic. And she's like, I don't deal with anything like that. And so she went off and had coffee with her friends, and she called me about 6 hours later because she had gone to the Starbucks to meet some friends at Starbucks. And when she walked in, her friends were in tennis skirts. And so her first thought, what do you think her first thought was? Anybody? What? That's exactly right. That is what she thought. They're all playing tennis without me. And then they all got chai latte whatevers, and she had a frappuccino. And she was sitting there going, and she started to hide the frappuccino because they had their chai lattes and their cute little tennis skirts on, and they were about a size 2. Maybe. And as she sat there, their sizes got smaller. You know, she was like, no, it's a 0. And then she's like, I'm an 8. I'm a 16. I'm a 24. And she's doing this. And so then she's like, they're conversing, talking about all this stuff they're doing, and she didn't hear anything. She said, I left, had no idea what even they were talking about, because the entire time that I was there, I was comparing myself to them, how they left me out, how they have everything, because they know it, and because it morphed into so much that wasn't even at all at play, that her mind let it just go, and it totally robbed her of her joy. And so she called me and she's like, I thought I didn't compare. Apparently I do it a lot. And she said it made me feel so bad. And that's what it does. It sucks the life out of you. On Monday was my birthday. I turned 50 years old. And it's interesting because, and it was a hilarious birthday because my sister-in-law called me, you know, to wish me a happy birthday. She's been my best friend since we were 5. Really and truly, and she married my brother despite that. And because she knew him, and she was scared of him. She would call our house and not come if he was there. And even when they walked down the aisle, I was like, oh my gosh, she's marrying David. But David is such a great guy. And he really is now. He really actually is. And so as she's talking to me, I told her, I was like, listen, I'm 50. I'm free. I am free to do anything now. Like, I am going to wear the same outfit 2 days in a row, and I am not caring. And I am going for everything with Lycra. I have no room for Spanx. I'm never wearing Spanx again. And as if I ever did. Which she's sitting there going, this is really scary because you're already that way. And I was like, well, now I have freedom. And so she's at Costco and she goes, she said, oh my gosh, the Vaseline is on sale for $1.98. And I was like, what? And she goes, yes, $1.98. And she goes, have you ever seen it below $2? And I was sitting there going, what? I really was. I was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, I can't think of the last time I have checked a price on Vaseline. And she's like, oh my gosh. And she goes, I'm taking a picture right now and I'm putting it on Twitter. And I was like, what? And she goes, no, I'm putting it on Instagram. And I was like, wow, that's really going to blow that platform, you know? And so she keeps, I'm howling at this point, going, okay, you are weird. And I'm like, I don't know who is old in this situation, but it is not me. And so she laughs, and we get off the phone, and we're, you know, later on that day, probably a few hours later, she texts me, and she says, it dawned on me when you said that you've never checked the price of Vaseline that you might have thought I wasn't saying gasoline. And she goes, now we definitely need to get our hearing checked or live close to each other so we can read each other's lips, you know? And because it was so funny, because that also happens as you get old. I can't hear very well out of my ear. But as I sat there on that birthday, because 50 is a big one, isn't it? There are some big ones. Was 30 big? I don't even remember. Maybe it was. It was probably the wonderful one, you know, those few ones that you're like, yes, finally, I'm 25. People might listen to me. And maybe the same with 30. 40 makes you breathe a little bit. 50's weird. It's like halfway. You know, I sat there and I was like, well, I hope I'm halfway there, like I have half more. And I was like, no, I'm not going to let it feel weird. But here's what happens. My daughter had a 17-year-old birthday probably 3 weeks ago. And she was so crabby. She was borderline hateful. And it didn't matter what we did. You know, we bought her exactly what we thought she wanted without her asking for it, you know? So it was like, really, we know you. We got you a little turntable so you can play a record. Why they want to do that, I don't know. But that's what teenagers want to do, by the way. Today, they would like to play an album. And so, I know. But even that, and so there was something weird at play in the situation. And it hits on birthdays. It hits on things that are big, like prom for your kids. It hits on homecoming. Because in these days, there's expectations. Okay? And the truth of the matter is they're very powerful. Expectations are enormously powerful. But what makes them powerful is this funny little thing called comparison. Because you can't help yourself but take what is happening and decide whether it's okay, whether it's above or below whatever you expect it to be. And if it's above, happy. I'm good. You know, I'm good. It exceeded expectations. But if it's below, it like tools your world. You know? And it's everywhere. It was in our house. And that's where I sat that day going, I am so not letting any expectations of a day being good or bad. And everyone's questions, what'd you do today? What'd they get you? And I'm like, nothing. And except they might have gotten me something that was last year. They got me something that was in the gift closet. And it really was something, an item that I was returning. And they put it out. And I was like, well, this is sorry, you know? And I bought it for myself to return. But there you sit, and it's like, I'm not going to let it tool with us, and we all have to hit there. And your kids deal with it all day long, every day. And honestly, so do we. And it's one of these things, and they have in their hands, and I don't have my cell phone on me. Did anybody in here see the special that they did on CNN with Anderson Cooper about 13? Did you watch it? It was very interesting, wasn't it? What did you take from it? Like, what really was a takeaway from you as I put you on the spot?
Just that it's scary what 13-year-olds see and do, and they're sexting and texting and pornographic-ish, you know, things, and they are really slanderous to each other. And say
it wasn't that unbelievable, the hurtful...
Hurtful, horrible things they say to each other.
That they feel freedom to because it's a text, and it's not said in person, and so they can do whatever they want. And they live on that thing. There was one girl that said that she texted in a morning 150 times. And so in play in there is what we all want. We just want to belong. They really do it because they want to belong. And they do it because they want to be accepted. Okay? And it's like, let me be okay. And comparison is, oh, so brutally alive in that venue. How many likes did I get? Did I get more than they did? Did I get less than they did? Oh, if I got less, then it sure tells me who I am, and I am a loser, and I thought I was a loser, and now it's confirmed that I'm a loser. And they do it with the pictures. They look at themselves compared to what everybody else is doing. And there's actually a psychological term. Are we on or not on? on my part. So we have the comparison, which is the issue, all right? So the problem is this, and it's everywhere. Is anybody immune to it? Do you think anybody is immune to it? You know, it started in the garden. It really was the tool that was used in the garden, which I find so interesting, because there they are fine, and all of a sudden they have something presented to them, and there's another being that's there that's better. And someone says to them, he's got something you don't have, which comparison's the vehicle that's used to point that out. And you would be okay if you had it. So eat of that. And the interesting thing to me is that they never had known shame before that. They had never even known that they had no clothes, you know, because everything they were doing was serving out. It didn't, nothing around them defined their self-worth, because they just tended the garden. They just did what they were to do. And then this comes in. Their eyes go from out to in. They notice, and then the shame starts. And I find it so interesting, because it is that powerful to have it all occur with my eyes on myself. There's a small problem with my eyes outward and on others. There's a lot of joy and security, believe it or not, but society will never, ever, ever, never, ever, ever tell you that. It will always say, you first, you go, you be better. And it is, it's these words that are brutal: better, faster, smarter, thinner, wiser. You could go down any route. And then you add things like could, would, and should, which are brutal. Fair comes into play, fair, not fair. And then the ever elusive enough. I had a friend that was redoing her house. Her husband said that they could do their lawn, you know, just get a landscaper to come in and do the lawn. Well, as soon as they did the lawn, what happened? She noticed that the color in her house really didn't look as good as it did before. And so then she had to paint her house. And then as soon as she painted the outside of the house, she walked in the house. And it was like, oh my gosh, this looks terrible, you know? And she said, I became very good friends with Houzz, H-O-U-Z-Z, which any remodeler knows, with Pinterest. She said, I thought about it all the time. And she said, I did it in the guise of getting a good deal. And she said, my family was around me, but I was never present with them, because I was always thinking about the next thing and what it was going to be and how it was going to look and whether my countertop would look as good as her countertop, how long the countertop would look good. And it's like, and there we go. And your mind, and she said, my mind was so held captive by enough, and there never was. And it's fascinating. It's everywhere. It's comparison takes you, you know, it's like I wrote in the book that it arrives on the scene like an electric car. You don't hear it. It just kind of comes up, and then it tempts you with things like measuring up, you know, and it tempts you with fair and not fair. And it tempts you with beautiful vacations that your friends are having because you just saw it on Facebook and you could see their foot in front of the ocean and it looked good and you're not in front of the ocean, but they are. And why are they? It's just not right. And why am I not? And there we sit. And then it lures you in, and then it takes you off to the land of discontent. It's like a bullet train once you get in there. There's so many articles right now just in the news about it. There's a term called Facebook depression. It's actually a clinical term now. Because when you go on in that, but it's true. They have found that people will go onto Facebook feeling one way, and they get off of it feeling another way. Because they call it, and I'm sure y'all have heard of this term, or maybe you haven't, but it's like looking at everybody's highlight reel and comparing it to your regular. They have found with kids, there's a very, very sad trend with the kids. It's so, so brutal that it's almost hard to say it. Suicide is at an epidemic rate right now in the United States. Self-harm is at a higher rate than it ever has been, and that's the self-harm that they know. Because for them to even rate it, it has to be somebody that has gone in to actually get help. And there's a show that ESPN did not long ago on an athlete from Penn, and it's interesting. She was a really close friend of one of my friend's sons who was at Penn. Do you know the story? Dang, it's brutal. And I ran into her right around Christmas, and I asked how her son's a great basketball player, and he'd gone to Penn to play basketball. And I was like, "How's he doing?" And she said, "Well, he's not doing very well." And I was like, "Why?" And she said he had a really close athlete friend of his that went to the top of the parking garage, a beautiful young lady, and walked off the edge. And lo and behold, ESPN did a story on her, and it's called Split Image. And they point so much of it back to Instagram and how depressed she was because she would see this life that her friends were living, and she wanted that life, or she wanted her life to be anything like that. But she was also posting the same pictures that her friends were posting because the same stuff was going on in her life. But these pictures that they craft don't look like the real stuff. And so what she felt like she was living a lie, that it wasn't real. And there's a young author, like a blogger, his name's Paul Agoni, and he calls it obsessive comparison disorder. And he says it's the new OCD for the millennials. He said it's worse than smallpox for his generation because they go on, it's called, you know, they're comparing themselves. He says, I can go on to Facebook and look at my frenemies, and all their 348 pictures of great stuff, and it just makes me sick. It's like makes me anxious. It makes me sad. It makes me think less of myself. And therein goes this interesting new phenomena of social media based depression. And it's real. They also have apps to help you. You know, every kid's like taking the selfies, click, click, click. And you can do selfie help on your apps where you can actually Photoshop your selfies so that you don't look like really who you are, which it doesn't take very much to go down that road. Because then you go out and someone doesn't even recognize you because it's not you. You look different than you did look. And then you have these hateful stuff that's going on this social media venue that is crushing the soul of young people. And I'm just saying, it doesn't do, I mean, really, can anybody in here say that you go on that stuff and you walk away feeling like $1 million? Nobody does. Nobody does. And so it's like, put the oxygen mask on yourself first before helping the kids. Because there is, you know, I really can't imagine the Lord ever allowing us to be in a place where there isn't a lifeline to get out of it. And there is. And I'm like, is this something that is here because it's going to be so countercultural that it really will be a different group of people that aren't allowing some of this stuff to infiltrate, that really do go to the Lord and find contentment, and that it will be so beautiful that everybody would long for that? I don't know. There's a new term that's around called the quarter life crisis. Because it's not even a midlife crisis anymore. 22-year-olds are getting out of school and they don't, it hits that expectation thing and it doesn't look like what they thought it would look like. And then they start to say something's wrong with them instead of it just being regular. I mean, who had a job when you got out of school? The accountants. And pretty much that was it. That's all I knew. And then I remember living with four other people so that we could afford the rent. And then you ate peanut butter and you never went out to eat for dinner because you had no money to go for dinner. And it wasn't some indictment on you. It was just life. And it was kind of a great life, I thought. It's not so much anymore. It's harder because there's this element of living out loud and being on, you know, it's beyond performance living, although that's a part of it. But it's as if you're performing because everything is for everyone to see. And there's some thought that everybody's looking. Okay? It doesn't help being a young parent anymore, I feel, for you. Because I could serve Cheetos and a hot dog that was not a GMO, organically grown, and gluten-free. And I could serve it on paper plates. It didn't, like, have to look like, you know, a Star Wars theme. Where, like, the grapes are on a skewer, you know, so it's a lightsaber. Or the clown theme, you know. And because Pinterest, yeah, I love it. But it's really ruined everything. Like, you can't have anybody over. Because good luck with that. It doesn't look like it, you know. And so it's a little stressful. Because none of us look like it. So how? All right, so who, what, when, where, and how? Is it a problem? It is a problem, you know? All right, so it's a problem. How do we do it, all right? Because there are little triggers. It's like the measuring up part. You know, it's hard to go anywhere and not hear the measuring up. It's hard to, with the high school kids, I mean, really, it starts when they're young because it's like, do this so you get there, you know? Be on this team because if you're not on this team, you won't be on that team, and then you won't be able to put on your college application. And now we have, like, junior league at young levels because, and it's called YMSL, Young Men's Service League. Anybody in it? And the NCL, National Service League. Oh, y'all. enjoy the freedom. It's coming your way. Because you too can do Junior League with your daughters. And because they've got to have those hours. If they don't have the volunteer hours, then they won't be able to put it on their college application. If they don't have those on their college application, they won't get in, which is not true, okay? And then you kind of ruin the volunteering because you've just made it about yourself instead of having it be actually what it's there for. But it's very interesting because it's like, well, you've got to hit this mark. And here's the elusive mark. It does, what happens to the mark as soon as you hit it? It goes up. Yep. And so it never stops. And what are you doing when you're looking? Here I am. There it is. There's a little friend right there going, come get in my car. You know, compare yourself to them. Compare yourself over here. Compare yourself to the mark. Compare yourself to the expectation. And there's not all comparison is bad. Some of it really can inspire us. You know, it really can. It's when we let it take control of our thoughts that it can get pretty sorry. And it's a hard thing to stop, you know. And the vehicles that we have right now don't make it very easy. The perspective. Now I'm going to hit you with a few metaphors, okay? So I won't do that. Would y'all help me? Oh my gosh. It really is. It's like, I'm glad I didn't die there by like some lasers. Okay. Everybody gets a card. Everybody gets one of those. One of those. And everybody gets a piece of paper. And I have my glasses. And then I might need my bag. I'm not walking out there again. Period. All right, so the power of inequality. Okay, you know inequality. Who's a math teacher in here? Are there any math? Yay! Huh? Well, whatever. It's not hard. What is inequality? Like on
one?
One is bigger than the other. So you have the, it's like this. It's either like this or like that. Less than and greater than. So it's very powerful. And we actually have a lot of stories in Scripture to teach us about this. All right? The power of inequality, when you have that equal thing, it's brutal because it begs you to be greater than or less than. Okay? There's also limited vision in this whole thing because, okay, does everybody have the little piece of paper yet? Isn't this fun? You had no idea it was going to be so much fun. Just kidding. All right. Let me see if I've got a piece of paper. All right, does everybody have a piece of paper? Okay, I want you to take the piece of paper and I want you to roll it up like this. All right? So just roll it up like that. Okay, y'all are going to laugh at me, but I probably need that piece of paper to that little stack of my notes. Yeah, I'm impressive. It really is. All right, so I want you to look through this piece of paper. And then, really, put it up there and look through it. All right? I have a dinky one. It doesn't really matter what it is. Hi. Now put your arm. No, keep it up there. Everybody keep it up. Now put your right arm over here without hitting the person sitting next to you and wave it around. Can you see it? Is it moving around?
Yeah.
Yes, it is. But you can't see it, can you? All right? Because you, my friends, have limited perspective. All right? You cannot see it all. See also Joseph. Scripture is full. If you want to go find how to fight this stuff, go look. Joseph is a great example of, his life was seething with comparison. All right? Starts out, he, for whatever reason, is the favored child, isn't he? And you could tell, even by the clothing, the beautiful multicolored coat. And what happened with the brothers? What? They were so jealous. Jealousy is an interesting thing, isn't it? Sort of uses comparison to get there. They looked at themselves compared to this boy, and it didn't look right to them. A whole lot of not fair entered the picture. It's not fair. Why does he get this? He's younger. It's not fair. And then it became so hideous and ugly, they actually went so far as to physically harm him and to remove him from the family. All right? So you have Joseph in the midst of all this when he truly had been given a vision at the very beginning of what was going to happen. All right? For whatever reason, for the Lord's purpose, this man was set apart. Okay? And yet, because of comparison, his life was robbed from him. He goes and he is, you know, thrown into the cistern. He is sold into slavery. And then he goes into the area of Potiphar's, you know, household, where again, his wife comes in there, wants something that she can't have. She's looking at what she wants that she doesn't have, which again, it's like, well, I have all this, but I need that too. And then again, it's like out of control. And he goes to jail for that, sits in jail for years and years, forgotten to for all effect, intents and purposes. And yet he still stayed the course, which is so interesting. We don't know everything about Joseph. We really don't. We do know that he had faith. And we know that he kept his eyes on the Lord, even in the midst. And he stayed true to the moral compass that was guiding him. And in doing that, he actually excelled, because according to his giftedness, which he clearly had the gift of leadership, and he had the gift of administration, which he was uniquely given by God as a purpose that his life would be used to do for whatever reason. And so even in the midst of really a crummy, horrible, there's no way anyone could say that was a good situation, he stayed the course, okay? And then he was again forgotten. When he actually was asked to, you know, by the baker and the cupbearer, he helped them and they forgot him. And yet at one point, the Pharaoh did remember him and came. And then he was lifted out of that situation, which lasted, Dave, for how long? Like probably 20 years, somewhere in the realm of that, for a very, very long time. It didn't last for a month. And was any of it fair? Not according to our standards, it wasn't. And then we know by the story that he really takes that kingdom and allows it to thrive in the midst of famine, which is really interesting to go look through the Psalms and look at the verses about famine, how he will save you in the midst of famine, how he is the sanctuary, how he's got it all under control. And it's so interesting because there was somebody that was living in the famine who had been set apart because of what the purpose in his life. And it was to bring forward the seed that would actually be our salvation. Set apart. Nobody knew. And you know what? They thought he was dead. There was no connection. And yet, they make their way to Egypt. Jacob's family, who is the lineage of Christ. And they see, they go and they beg. And I find it so interesting because when they left Egypt at that point, you know, Joseph put in the sacks of his brothers the silver that they brought to pay for all of this stuff, he put back in the sacks, which I've always thought was so interesting. And was he tricky? Was he trying to trick them? And the more I read it, the more I've started to wonder, did he put the silver back in their sacks because they didn't need to pay for it because it was their grain anyway? Because it had been set apart for them from the beginning, because they would not be left in the land of famine, because they were why he was there. Which, by the way, he says, when his father dies and his brothers are standing before him and they're fearing for his life, please don't kill us, please don't kill us. He says, do y'all remember what he said? I was set apart for you. The purpose was greater than me. If he had leaned into this, really could have been a small problem. All this was going on, but he couldn't see it. Do you know that's happening in your life too? With each one of your kids, whatever moment you're living in, that could be hard, that could make, that society would tell you is a defining moment. Society would for sure say that Joseph's life was defined to be a disaster. And yet there was one involved in it that said, I don't do that. And you guys, we have that. And so do your kids. And what a beautiful gift to give them as they are surfing through this garbage and it's sucking air, to be able to say to them, this stuff that's like a whirlwind that you can't control, that's not real. This is real. This isn't likes, retweets, shares, all of that. That's not real. What is real is that you belong. What is real is that you have purpose. What is real is that you are loved. And you come here. And what is real is that you have something gifted inside of you to be able to encourage and pull up the bootstraps of the person standing next to you in some way, shape, or form. Because we know that the secret lies in a commandment. And do y'all remember what when he was asked, what's the greatest commandment? You didn't know it was interactive, did you? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. Okay, so the title of the book that I really had no choice but to write is called I'm Happy for You. Okay? I'm happy for you. And then the truth of it, sort of not really, because really I'm not very happy for you because I really do wish it was me. But that's sort of the authentic part, you know, because really I'm not. We're not. We would like to be you. I'm happy for you if you're not in my realm, but if you're in my sphere, then it's sort of, I don't like it. The title came from my daughter, who came out of taking a test one day after school. I think she was a freshman. She may have been an eighth grader, I don't know. And she said to me, I hate when they ask what the question, like ask me what grade I got, because that's what happens when they turn in a test or they get a test back. What'd you get? And it happens with all of us at whatever stage of life you are in. You know, did you get invited to this party? Did you not get invited to this party? Are you in this playgroup? Are you not in this playgroup? I think everyone here could say something, and you might even be able to say something for today of where you had that like, oh, you know. I can't believe she got that. I can't believe he got that. It happens in business meetings as you trade the, you know, business cards, VP versus SVP, and all of a sudden you're not so great because you don't have the S before your name, you know? And it's so interesting how we do that. So she says that. She said, I don't like it because if I get a grade better than everybody else, I love how that feels, and I want everybody to know. Like, I really do. And she said, and then the good grade is never enough. Like, if I got a good grade on this, I have to have a good grade on that. And she's like, and then it's like I can't breathe because I can't keep up. And then she said, but if I get a grade worse than everybody else, I really hate that because it confirms everything I think about myself, and that is that I'm stupid and that I'm dumber than everybody else, which is welcome to teenage girldom. I mean, it's just like, I'm terrible, nobody likes me. And which is not true, you know, but there's that element of just not being able to handle, like, the reality around them. And as she said that, I was like, sweetheart, I really think there's three words that you could say that would fix it all. And she's like, really? And I go, yeah, I do. And she goes, okay, what are they? And I was like, well, what do you think they are? You know, because that's good parenting, people. It is. If you take anything away, it's the what do you think? And she sat there and she came up with a few things like, I love you. And I was like, no, because that would be awkward. I got a 98. I got a 59. I love you. And she threw out a couple of others. I was like, no, no. And she was like, what is it? And I said, well, it's I'm happy for you. And she goes, well, that's four words. And because it is four words, it's not three words. Which is why I help no one with their math or anything like it. And she thought about it. And this is what I found was interesting. Because at that point, she was a very young teen. And she said, that is really interesting. Because I think in her mind, she started sitting there going, okay, the kid that is always saying, I got a 98, or I only got 100, I missed the extra credit, you know, because that really happens. And so most people are like, ugh, you know, they're like, I spit on you. But she's sitting there, and she's, I think in her head, she was saying, what if I said to her, that person, well, I'm so happy for you. And I think in her mind, she played it out. And if you play it out, it's very interesting what happens. It diffuses everything. It actually really does. Because it makes it not about you anymore. Now, the hard part is meaning it, for sure. And that's where this kid went. She's like, that's so interesting, but I think meaning it is the hardest part. Because it is hard. And I was like, listen, if you can go to why the person is having to say what grade they have, it could actually take you from comparing yourself to them to finding compassion for them. Because you have no idea what is going on in that house. It could be, I mean, what stress are they under? What stress do they put themselves under? What stress are their parents putting under? What stress do they feel in here that you feel too? Can you commiserate with them for a second? And it's like, yes, I actually can. But you can only do that if you exit it their grade defining your self-worth. Okay? Social media. It's technology. It is really just a platform. The problem with it is the way we react and interact with it, because we will allow it to define our self-worth. And it's like, no, don't do that. Don't do it. And so we started playing this little game when I used to have a PC and my computer was not doing well. And I'm just going to tell you, I do it all the time with my phone right now, because my phone is not a friendly phone. It just locks up all the time. And so what do? When it locks up, you reboot it. You turn it off and turn it back on. And so I told her, I said, when we used to reboot it, you know, the spinning wheel, be like, it's like, control, alt, delete, you know? And because the warm boot reboot is great because you don't lose everything. But if you turn the whole thing off, it's a problem, you know? And so I was like, control, alt, delete. So here you go. Control. Because here's part of the secret. If you can recognize it in the moment, and by the way, if you're going into some ultra comparison thing, which you could do the minute you go into an event, women do it all the time, because we decide whether or not we're okay if we came casual or cocktail. And I quite frankly go casual a lot, and I regret it pretty quickly. I did the other night. I went to something, and I was like, dang, I thought this was casual. And I was like, oh, this is bad. And I might have worn something very much like this, where I think I'm trying to pretend like I am 16, and I'm not. It's just comfortable. And you see, I'm 50 now, and so no waistband. And so I walk in, and I'm like, well, this is bad. And it wasn't even like cocktail. It was like, it really seemed black tie to me. And I'm sitting there going, what in the world? I'm like, in Wichita Falls, this would have been black tie, people. And so I'm sitting there, you know, trying to go near the wall. Because that's what it does. And I'm like, I want to leave. Let me run. But I've decided that now I'm a missionary dresser. Here you go. Really, it's true. Do y'all know what missionary dressing is? I think I might have coined the phrase, and I live it. And I do it for you. Because I come underdressed so everybody else can feel good about what they have on. It's true. Somebody has to do it. And it really works in all kinds of venues. It does. I drive the filthiest car available because it's parked underneath a pecan tree and the antenna is broken. And so I can't go through the car wash. So everyone at stoplights feels great about their car because at least they are not driving my car. I mean, it's a great way to live. It is. And so we do this. We can let clothes define how we feel about ourselves. Really, it's crazy, isn't it? And it's all but me looking at you going, oh, because we do it and we're like, oh, thank God it was casual. Or, I wish she knew. If only they knew. And so there we sit. So control in that moment, because I really did sit there in that moment at this event that I wanted to be. It was an interesting event about a college, and I really wanted to know about it for one of my kids. And I was like, I am so not going there. Control. What's making me feel bad is that I'm looking at everybody else and deciding that I shouldn't be here because I'm not dressed like they are. That's so stupid. Okay? So control. Alt. All right? Alt. Get an alternative perspective. Because it's so powerful. Perspective is huge. Okay? Here's another example. David. King David. All right? It's the idea, this perspective. David took a long-term perspective of life, okay? When he was tapped, and we were talking about this the other day, because I actually have a 13-year-old boy in my house, and they think that when David was tapped to be king, he was around 13 or 14 years old, which is pretty interesting. My daughter, when we were talking about this, said, it is so interesting, because kids are just, and she goes, and I hate the term kids. I don't like when someone calls me a kid. And I was like, okay. And she said, they discount kids all the time, like shortchange them, like they can't do anything. So you have this young boy who is tapped, okay? How long did he spend running? He was anointed king. He really was. But he never let that define his relationship with the Lord. He really maintained perspective in the midst of so much really challenging stuff, all right? The perspective of gratitude. You can go through the Psalms and look at the gratefulness. I am so grateful. And that's huge with perspective, all right? pull out some gratitude because you've got a lot to be grateful for. And it can be little bitty things. I sat there that night at that event going, I'm so grateful that I had a car to drive up to. I'm so grateful I get to be at this event. I'm so grateful that I get to even think that my daughter will go to college. I'm so grateful she was born in a country where she could be educated. I'm so thankful. Thankful, 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 thankful. And then it's like, oh, I think I could breathe for a minute. And if I'm not going down the gratitude road, you can do it through your phone, that thing that can cause so much trouble. I was sitting in carpool not long ago, and I accidentally, well, I just had a lot of time, because that's all I do, sit in the car, just drive and drive. And I started scrolling through, like, just my pictures, which is so fun. If you haven't done that lately, go look at your old pictures, because it's a blast. And it's so cute. And then I started looking at the date of the pictures and started to remember some of the stuff that was going on during the date of those pictures. And I'm going to tell you, it wasn't great stuff. And I sat there going, we lived through it. I have friends today that were my friends then. It never was as bad as I thought it was in the moment. Okay, and if I can go, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was in that moment, which means it's not as bad as I think it is in this moment, because 5 years from now, I'm going to look back like this, and it's not going to be a big deal. So why not opt for that now? Okay, perspective is huge. These glasses, I put these on all the time. You may not wear readers, but you do wear probably sunglasses at some point. And think about the lenses. As you pick them up, think about the lenses that you are looking through, okay? Are you allowing the lenses of society tell you what you see? Are you let the lenses of truth tell you what to see? This thing, here's another one. I really am hitting you with metaphors because I think it's interesting. This is a mirror, all right? It's a cute little mirror. See, even this, it says Wyma on the back. My daughter Lucy did this probably when she, you know, they liked them when they were two. They girls do, and they're like, ah, which is another interesting thing. Go on Dove, the Dove Beauty sketches. You will see little kids looking in the mirror, and they smile. And they're like, ah. They see a mirror, and they're like, you know. And adults see a mirror, and they're like, ah. You know, it's like, don't. I don't want to see. But little kids, what is it about them? They love it. Do you know that a mirror is simply a piece of glass, this little physics lesson, with a reflective backing on it. That's all it is, all right? The reason why it works is because of physics. And it works primarily, is there a physics teacher in here? Because I'm butchering this. Is there any scientists in here? Thank you. Oh, you are, aren't you? You can go ahead. It's all right. I think I'm going to do this okay. I might do it justice. It is light that informs a reflection. You have no reflection without light. Okay? You really don't. So here you go, people. When you look in this mirror and it starts to give you a message about yourself, because it does, and most adults don't really just sit in front of the mirror. If we do, we're trying to fix something. Think about what light is informing you, because according to science, what is projected off of this actually is called a light print. Isn't that interesting? It's a light print is what a reflection is. And what light are you allowing to inform your print? And say it to your kids. Really, what light are you allowing? Because I'm going to tell you, there's one light that says you're beautiful. Always. There is one light that sees your potential, not the mistakes. There is one light that gave everything for you because you are worth that much. Do you believe it? Do you believe it? Do you? Spend some time with the one that said it, and you'll start to believe it. Now everybody has a card, right? Okay. When you looked at that card, what did you think? Anybody willing to say? Did anybody think anything?
I didn't.
What did you think?
I looked at hers, I went, oh, we're the same.
Okay. So they looked. She looked. All right? I love that. And what did you get? What cards do y'all have?
Seven.
A seven. That's a good number. What do you think?
I thought, oh, seven. I love that number.
Oh, see, another. So it's a good number.
I got hair in my head, though.
You did? Y'all are so cute, first of all. Just so cute, it's almost too much. Okay, it's like Too Cute. Have y'all ever seen that show? My kids watch Too Cute. It's horrible. It's like all about puppies and kittens, and that's all they do. Okay, so what? When you compared, what did you think?
They had
Isn't that interesting? Okay, did y'all hear that? Compared, one was higher than the other, and instantly it was like, well, I just don't know, is that going to say something about me? Fascinating, isn't it? Anybody else?
I had to tell her that I was a queen.
Boom.
Oh,
the queen and the hearts. Does anybody get the two of clubs? Did anybody? Did anybody get an Uno card? Because you're just out.
No.
Oh, there's the Uno card. You don't get to play. I love it. Okay, here's the secret. It's just a card. It doesn't mean anything. Not one thing. Nothing. Okay? Really, it means nothing. All right? But that's what we do with what we have. All right? Whatever you've got, it's like, well, it's not that. I didn't. And then we're looking. Well, gosh, she's so much better at hospitality. This kid over here can really do math, or they're a scientist, or a great athlete. Oh, they've got all the great athletes. Oh, my gosh, they have a lake house. Oh, they went on this vacation. And then we let it do something to say something about ourselves, which is so interesting because it's really just a card, okay? And it is not a completely fair analogy, but it's interesting. Let's go back to David. David had a friend. Did anybody know David's friend? Jonathan. You know, it's interesting. We did a study in the midst of all of this. As I was engaging in this terrible topic, I made the people that were around me do a Bible study with it. And I really did go through Scripture. And I was like, if I'm playing in this, it has got to be feeding truth into me. So I hit Jonathan, which I find is so interesting. Because here you have the Israelite nation, who their king was God, all right? Their king was God. But their king was different than everybody else's king. And they said those words. We aren't like everybody else. We want a king like everybody else, which is fascinating because that just probably wasn't the best choice looking at everybody else and letting that make their decision, okay? Which is what we do with colleges. Where's everybody? It's so fascinating. Because everybody has put onto this like ginormous pedestal the Ivy Leagues, and because that will say something about you. It doesn't say anything. It's fascinating the power we give these things. And so here you have Jonathan. Saul was tapped because the Lord gave the people what they wanted, and he had a son, Jonathan. Jonathan, interestingly enough, he really was an amazing character. Go back and read in 1 Samuel a little bit about Jonathan. Because there was a point even Jonathan was dead on with the Lord. He hit a point where he did something that his father said not to do because he was paying attention to the people and what his father said to do did not make sense. And he stayed the course with what was right and true. He was a straight arrow. Interestingly enough, he was a commander in the army, which means that he actually was significantly older than David. They think he might have been 15 years older than David, which is so interesting. And yet he was David's best friend. And here was what I find the most interesting thing about Jonathan. His card did not have king on it. Never did. But according to society, it should have. Shouldn't it? He was the heir. Absolute heir. And do you know who didn't care? Jonathan. Because he knew that David was the anointed one. And he said, I am here to support you. You are the anointed one. You will be king of Israel. And there was never some wringing of hands. It's just, why not me? And I find it so interesting. Because in the midst of his purpose, he found joy. And the joy sustained him despite everything else that was going on around him. Then see also his father, who did everything to compare himself to David. And he was such a miserable soul because there is no life in it. There's another king whose name is Hezekiah. And he's so interesting because a lot of the reason why I think, why do we give into these fears? You know, what is it about it? Or what is it about comparison? I'm afraid that I won't measure up. We're afraid that our kids are going to hit. We're afraid that we're going to, you know, get hurt in some way. It's very hard to trust the one who might have been dealing out those, that gave you the giftedness that really is uniquely yours, who gave you the children that are given to you because they are yours for a reason. Because you love them better than anybody else can, by the way. And it wasn't a mistake, whether they were in your womb or out of your womb. It's not a mistake, okay? Because you, each one of you, me, I struggle with it when my kids fail. I'm like, oh, gosh. Oh, what decision did we do that was so bad? We totally screwed them up. It's just the worst ever. You know, and I can just go through the, it's like, you go through all the files going, yeah, I should have done this differently. And you can drive yourself crazy with that. Or you can love them in the midst, you know? It's amazing. So these, you've got these, this trust. Do I trust the one who says, I have prepared in advance works for you to do, that I know that he knew you in the womb? He knows your children in the womb. This right here. That baby is known and was known from the very beginning the cells formed. That little pumpkin back there is known from the beginning because there's something that kid back there is going to do for the Lord to further this kingdom. Okay? But do I trust the one to be able to do those kinds of things? Hezekiah, because the world is going to tell you all kinds of things that are scary and bad. And it's going to make you do things to keep up with everybody else because that's what you're supposed to do. Hezekiah was a king that was hit very hard with another, a very, very ruthless ruler named Sennacherib. And this, and the story is three times in Scripture. It's in 2 Kings, 2 Chronicles, and in Isaiah, which, you know, to me, if it's repeated that many times, there's something, quite possibly something to learn in it. Sennacherib was a very horrid leader. I think he would have to be compared to the ISIS people now. He did sick things to people, which it's hard to believe that it still goes on in this day and age. It's just so shocking and unbelievable, and yet people lived through this. He came to Hezekiah. He sent his messenger and said, you go tell them that I'm coming for them, and they should surrender to me. And he shouted it out, and Hezekiah said, we won't surrender to you. Our God will protect us. And he said, I don't care about your God, because look at me. And he actually said the words, I can defeat your God. That God has nothing over me, which was probably a small mistake. But it scared the living daylights out of Hezekiah. And Sennacherib wrote him a hateful, horrendous letter, which if I can read, I'll put on my glasses so that I can have good perspective. And I'll read to you a little bit from here. I think I will. Oh, my goodness. I saw it when I pulled up. I might be reading it. I might have to pull out my Bible. Hezekiah. I'm so sorry, y'all. Am I like the flakiest speaker that you've ever had? Probably. That's Matthew. Yeah, where did I put it? Really sorry, you guys. Because I didn't bring my Bible with me either, because it doesn't seem to work as well without the actual, but it could. Does anybody have a little 2 Kings action? Does anybody have scripture with them besides me not having it? All right, look at 2 Kings 19. Oh, do you have your Bible? Oh, you've got your, I do too, but I can't walk down there because it might like scare everybody. Oh, good. And these two, do you want to help with these? Because this is some one more fun thing.
Sure.
All right, so 2 Kings. I'm coming. Well, I'm not exactly sure. 2 Kings 19 is what it is. I do know that. And it's the letter.
You want to just scroll through here?
Oh, I'm pulling it up now, too. Oh, you've got it. Great. Hezekiah seeks help from the Lord. Yes. Here you go. He says, after King Hezekiah's officials delivered the message to Isaiah, I just love, one thing about scripture I think is so cool is that it really does all work together. And I love that you have big writing. Say to your master, this is what the Lord says. Do not be disturbed by this blasphemous speech against me from the Assyrian king's messengers. Okay, right there, you know that the Lord knows exactly what the Assyrian king said. Because he sees and he hears everything. Here's a few things about your Lord. He sees, he knows, he hears, he knows your thoughts. You don't even have to say what it is. Do you believe that? Because you can go look through the New Testament and the Old Testament to see that that's true. Listen, this is the Lord through Isaiah. I myself will move against him, and the king will receive a message that he is needed at home. So he will return to his land, while I will have him killed by his sword. Had any of that happened? No, so he's in control of that too, isn't it? Interesting. Meanwhile, the Assyrian chief of staff left Jerusalem and went to consult the king of Assyria, who had left Lachish and was attacking Libna, because that guy was all over the place. Soon afterward, King Sennacherib received word that the king of Ethiopia was leading an army to fight against him. Before leaving to meet the attack, he sent the messengers back to Hezekiah in Jerusalem with this message. This message, and they yelled it. They yelled it so that everyone could hear it in Jerusalem. He said, don't let your God, in whom you trust, deceive you with promises that Jerusalem will not be captured by the king of Assyria. You know perfectly well what the kings of Assyria have done. Wherever they have gone, they have completely destroyed everyone who stood in their way. Why should you be any different? Had the gods of the other nations rescued them? No. It's amazing. Okay, so Hezekiah has this letter, and he lays it before the Lord. O Lord God of Israel, you are enthroned between the mighty cherubim. You alone are God of all the kingdoms of the earth. You alone created the heavens and the earth. Bend down, O Lord, and listen. Open your eyes, O Lord, and listen and see to Sennacherib's words of defiance against the living God. And that's what he did. He laid the papers down below. And he really did. He lay on the ground going, please hear, please see. It's against you that he's doing this. And it's like, what letter is in your hand today that has convinced you that there's something in the world that is out to defeat you that has power over you? What is it? Could you say it out loud? What your fear is? What is it? Because there's all kinds of things that we've got. Not just for ourselves, but definitely for our children. Because if anyone in your life that you want it to go well for, it's them, you know? And here's this letter. Lord, please help me. My brother, my oldest brother, has a daughter that's blind. And we went hiking in a canyon that's in Sedona. And we had sort of forgotten. We hadn't been there in years. And we had forgotten that there was a stream that went through the canyon. And so when we came up to the first crossover with this 21-year-old blind child who knew full well there was a stream because she heard it from way back, she stood there, and I was with my daughter. And because we try to act like she's not, but I'm just telling you, you don't go do something where they're going to have to cross a stream. I mean, and I looked at my daughter, and I was like, what were we thinking? Oh, my gosh. Because it, like, hit home. I can't see. She could hear all the laughter of everybody else running ahead of her. And I was just sitting there going, this is terrible. My brother walked up beside her, and he said, Maggie, I want you to put your hand on my shoulder. And he whispered in her ear, here's what we're going to do. He said, we're going to go across the stream, and we're going to go. I'm going to tell you exactly where to put your foot. And he said, here we go. She held on to his shoulder, and he goes, 40 degrees right, straight ahead, 60 degrees left. Okay, this one's a little slippery. Hold on. Beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, boop, beep. They're on the other side. She didn't flinch. She didn't cry. She didn't say, this is terrible. How dare you? She heard her father's voice. And you know what? She knew to trust him. He had nothing ill for her. He had only good for her. She couldn't see. She didn't know. She was entering something that was absolutely destined for problems, for pain. Could have been serious pain. And yet, put your hand on my shoulder. Right, left, boop, 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 boop. Unlike her aunt who followed behind her, where her brother on the other side was like, please, someone give me alcohol. I need to wash out my eyes. It was so ugly. But there she sat, hearing the voice of the one who loved her. And I have to ask you, do you know the voice of the one who loves you? Who says, and here we'll pass out these cards. Are y'all tired of me yet? Who says, I know you. I am your sanctuary. I am safe. You can go through so much of Scripture and see where the Lord God himself says, I will, I know. He knows it all. He's got you covered. He hasn't put you down a road that you cannot travel. He also says Do you know how many times he says, don't be afraid, that the scripture says, don't be afraid? Anybody? Yell it out. How many? Yes. What does he usually say after that? Don't be afraid, for I am with you. Don't be afraid, for I am with you wherever you go. Don't be afraid, for I am with you. Who is it that's with you? God is with you. So when this comparison garbage starts to hit you, don't listen. Control, Alt, Delete. Control, recognize what's happening. Alt, get an alternative perspective, and then delete. Stop it. Just stop. And by the way, you can't. He has to help you do it. Okay? We've had that beautiful moon. Did anybody go look at the blood moon? Wasn't it beautiful? It was so bright before. And you know that the moon has no light? Nothing. It has no source of energy. What is its source of energy? The sun is. It reflects 100%. Isn't that a beautiful example of what the Lord is even telling us all day, every day? I'm not asking you to do it yourself. I'm saying, come to me. I do it for you. Do you think Moses, when he'd come down off that mountain, was like, glow, just whatever you do, glow? He didn't even know he was glowing because he had spent time with the goodness of the Lord and the reflection occurred. And this is what I find so interesting. To be able to give your children freedom from these pressures, which will never stop while we're on this earth, but to be able to have a lifeline in the midst, do you talk about glowing? Do you know what I mean? And you know what happens? It's crazy attractive. My daughter on the volleyball court was stressed out because she was very nervous because that involves someone hitting, you know, you're part of the team. Got to hit it. Everybody's looking at me. And in the moment, she was like, you know what? She looked at the girl next to her and she said, you have such a great serve. She wasn't even serving. In her mind, this is what she was doing. I'm freaking out. Something's not good. I think people are looking at me, comparing me to everybody else. And and she was like, okay, you have a great serve. And so what it did, got her eyes off of herself for a moment, started to breathe a little oxygen into her. The kid next to her, it breathed oxygen into her too. She looks at my daughter and she's like, man, I think you have a great spike. And then it was like, vroom, they're both lifted up. The pressure went from to this. And it's amazing what happens. And it was good. They both tasted the good. It turned down the volume of the texting stuff because relationship is occurring here and it always is better than the other. Okay, these are cards for you guys to take home. They're bookmarks. All right, did everybody get one? Can I have one of them? I don't want to step down there because I might like blow everybody up. This is called unique, all right? And you can put yourself in here or you can put your kids in here. This is a picture that these are pictures that I took at Rafa's. Rafa's is a Mexican food that's like down the street from our house. And they still have like butcher paper on the top of the table and they have crayons. And these pictures were taken really within the last year, which is hard to believe that an 18-year-old would pick up a crayon and actually color. But all of our children were there and they each picked up a crayon as if they were 5 and started coloring. And this is what they did. And as I watched them, I kept saying to myself, remember, remember, remember. On the top is my very artistic daughter. That L, it's an L, which is the beginning of her name. It didn't start like that. It started with just the little shapes. And as she started making shapes, she started putting them together. And then it was like, because that's who she is. The one right below that is you probably can't see it very well. Those are mathematical equations. And they actually, when you put them together, make a fractal. I don't know what a fractal is, but the child that made them does. He's different. But he does this all day, every day, okay? And I'm just going to tell you that this child for us, his normal is different than what everybody else wants. He's been hurt. Okay? And it's not fair. So much is not fair in this kid's life. And I sat there looking at that going, because that's all in his head, all the time. Boop, doop, boom, 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 boom. Equation, equation, equation. And he's fascinated by it. And chess. And I looked at him and I was like, Oh my gosh, the worth that is in that child. How dare anybody tell this kid there's not worth? Because we want kids like that, that don't stop, who do math, like all the time because they love it. The kid below that, do you see that scribble? That's nothing but scribble. Because this is our child that is like, he's really intense. He is equally really smart. He never stops. And it's interesting because he doesn't look back either. I find it a very interesting trait. He doesn't let the past define what this future is going to be. I don't get it. We did not do that. He did it. Now he is, we call him Fury because the kid, I'm just saying. Often I'm saying don't let that anger get the best of you. You use that for good. Don't, because it can take you down a road that is BAD and it's your choice. All right? But we want those kids that are like, that's a mountain over there. I'm going. And that's who he is. And you could see on the scribble. I was like, oh my gosh, that is him. The one below that, she's drawing fish. And she's singing. And she's 13 at this time going, just keep swimming, swimming, swimming. I'm not joking. And I was like, oh my gosh, that is so her. Just in her own world. We call it Sally World. Because it is. Who knows? And yet I love that. And she's kind of bohemian. And I'm like, we need those people. And then the little guy, the one on the bottom, tic-tac-toe. All he wants is to have a friend. It's like, just please play a game with me. Anybody. Game, please. It's like, please. And he loves people. He actually goes on the playground and says these words, will you be my friend? And I'm like, why would you say that? Oh my gosh, you're like setting yourself up to be rejected. They may be saying yes, but they don't mean it. You know? I'm like, what? And yet he continues. Each one of these children are different. They're each different. Society is going to tell us at any day, any time, that one of these is the thing. And if one of them is, the rest isn't. But are we really going to do that? So much self-worth in here. So much giftedness in every single home that is sitting right here. Are you ready to find it? Not let society tell you what it's supposed to be. Not look at the person next to them and say, oh, they need got to pave the road. It's worth it. Control-Alt-Delete. Use it. Help them learn how to use it. Do a little letter change in your house. Take comparison, take the R and the I out, add an S and an I, and you go from comparison to compassion. Take the best, add a little IR to it, and you get their best. Excellence is a lot different than striving for something that doesn't exist. Okay? It's those powerful words. I'm happy for you. Can we do it? If we did it together, that's kind of the key. Don't do it alone, and you don't have to. I'm happy for you, really and truly. Because what you do is not about me. And the perspective. Don't forget what glasses you're wearing. Don't forget what light informs your mirror. Are there any questions? Y'all didn't know I could talk so long, did you? Yeah, my family's like, we're so glad she's not here. Dave, you ever going to have me back? I'm just kidding. He's like, no. Really, do y'all have any questions? I get asked questions. Say it again. I don't know. I don't know. They've been acts of obedience, I'll tell you that much. If there's something I'm supposed to do, yes. This one was not fun. It really wasn't fun at all. It's a harsh subject. And I hope that if you look at it, that it will be fun and funny and that you really won't, that it will help start to pull back the scales of some stuff that you don't even realize is actually stealing joy from your life. And that together we can go, thanks, but no thanks, because it doesn't have to. Don't even give it the power. It's not worth it at all, like at all. And I really do think that's like, you know, I don't think you have to go to Haiti. You could be doing it at home. Just letting some, you know what I mean? Like getting rid of the societal trends that are sucking the life out of people. Just say no And then it's like, by the way, I'm struggling with the same thing you are. And as soon as we do that, it's like, oh my gosh, I thought I was alone. And people tell me that all the time. They're like, well, I can't believe you. I can't believe how honest you were. And I'm sort of like, I was? You know, I'm sitting there going, what was I honest about that I shouldn't have been honest about? And then I'm thinking, we all do it. So what difference does it make? Why give it the power? Because the power is in isolation. And by the way, that's what social media does. It makes you isolate. Forget about it. Bump up against it. Be healthy. When it's hurting, get away, you know? And your kids, we do not get it because we never had those things. They live it. It is truly that. It's horrible. That show was so depressing, just hideously depressing. And it had no hope at all. And I was just sitting there going, don't end with no hope. There is hope. People, there's a lot of hope. There's so much hope. Is it your kid that's going to be going a different road because everybody wants off this train? Any questions? Really? I'm here if you would like to ask a question. Yes, back here. They are.
Like my kids are young, but I just wonder how you, because that's their world, and you're like, that's horrible, it's dumb. You know, like,
well, it's so interesting. Well, and it starts so much younger now. I really am kind of grateful that we didn't have it when the kids were young, because it's like an appendage. For my youngest child, I don't know, maybe he's gone a day without touching one of those devices. And there's so much great stuff on it. The competitive stuff starts so young that it's almost hard to believe because they know. They hear the words and they know it. And so it may not be like the social media like shares, but it definitely is, you know, these teams. What team are you on? Are you on a team? Your child could, you know, speak Spanish by the time they're two. And they should be, you know, it's like all these kinds of things that we do that have them just on steroids, because if they aren't on steroids, then they won't be able to keep up. And so to me, it's a huge ministry that you have all around. You have the 20-year-old, my nephew, this new stuff that they do as far as the reveals, you know, when you're pregnant. Have y'all, I'm sure, please tell me, have you done it? Okay, because, you know, there's a few women in here that are like, I don't know what you're talking about. Now, when you have a child or you're getting engaged, my nephew, all of his friends, they're getting engaged. And so in order to get engaged, it has to be a production. Literally, like it is a production. I saw one yesterday that was in a movie theater where a kid was asking a young man, not a kid, was asking his young, you know, fiance to marry him. And the way he did it was he rented out the movie theater and he did a movie trailer. And I think this one had over 8 million views. I'm not joking you. He does this trailer where he has a film crew that's filming whatever, because you can do anything and it looks pretty darn good. And so they have him talking to his future father-in-law, asking for her hand in marriage, and then it films him running, you know, and he's like running through, doing the O.J. Simpson, and it's like him running to the theater, because then he runs up to the theater and it's like, whoa, I'm at the theater, where she's in the theater watching this trailer, and then it shows him running. It's so cute. It is really cute. And he's running into the theater. He gets some popcorn. He eats some popcorn. And then he's like, oh, yeah. And he goes in. And then it shows him coming through the doors. And he actually is going through the doors. He bends down on his knee in front of the whole crowd. And they're like, ah, you know, and will you marry me? Yes, I will. And this is on YouTube with over 8 million views. Okay, these are two people. All right, two people. And I'm just saying, marriage is not quite like that. Not really at all. And God bless him, because my word, he really set the bar high, you know? It's like, dang. And but there's something that compels them because they ask each other, How did you do it? What did you do? And it's the reveals on the, you know, is your icing in the center pink or blue? Is it a boy or girl? Are the balloons of here? And it's like everything is on steroids right now. And so in as much as we feel it, the children feel it also. And it becomes this performance stuff that starts when they're so young. And it just naturally feeds into the social media stuff, which is continued performance. And the problem... if you can't keep a semblance of reality involved in it, the person disappears, and the person doesn't exist anymore. And I think that's why they have these things called the quarter life crisis. And I think it's just beginning. I think it's the tip of the iceberg because so much of this stuff is new. It's sort of like the entitlement stuff. It seems gross. And we're about to really see what happens when an entitled generation has trouble functioning. Interestingly enough, they've shown throughout history that entitled people bring forth tyranny because they can't, they need someone to save them. And I find it very interesting, even in the political process that we have right now, some of the candidates, when you have, regardless whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, you have Bernie Sanders, who is the most liberal legislator in our country and has been outwardly forever. And then you have Donald Trump, who, I mean, really? He's kind of, it's hard for anyone to say that some of the stuff he has said isn't just wacko. But what he's saying, people are like, yes, save us. And they say to Bernie, yes, save us. Save us. Which is a very different mentality than this country has ever had. And so it's like we're at the tip of the iceberg of these things, not to be scary, just to recognize it and go, what gets us to these places? How do we get out of it? And I told my kids, one of my kids the other day, they have found there's another very interesting documentary. Okay, so Anderson Cooper's, it's called 13. There's another very interesting documentary called The Race to Nowhere. Have y'all heard about that? It's fascinating. It's about our education system and how kids in education these days, because it is so performance-driven on every level. Schools have to perform, teachers have to perform, and you're axed if you don't perform well. The kids perform. The parents go in to perform for the kids so that the kids can perform okay. And so you have all of this working together, and they're saying that what they're getting on the other side are people that can't critically think and can't problem solve. And they will say these words even in a research lab, and I'm trying to think of what school it was at. It was either at Stanford or it was a biological or it was a biology research lab. They said, we want you to find the answer to this. And the young student that was a resident said, just tell me what the equations are and I'll get the answer for you. And it was like, tell me how and what it is that I'm supposed to find, and then I will do it. Because it's so rubric-driven, and the box, I can't go outside the box because I don't know how to do that. I don't have the confidence to be able to do it because I'm not sure I've ever failed, and I'm so scared to fail. And so you have all this stuff working together. It's fascinating what that does, and it's so inbred from a young age. It's just interesting. It doesn't have to be that way. But you're definitely marching to the beat of a different drum if you don't. But for people of faith, it's like you kind of have the ace in the hole. You sort of have the one that said, it's over. It is finished. You sort of have the one that said, I am victorious. You sort of have the one that said, I know where he's going. And by the way, he's going to end on the other side. And he also says, I am the same today, yesterday, and forever. He says, I don't change. And he says, I don't think like you do. I don't act like you do. I am not of the world. That's who's on your side. And that's kind of exciting. And to me, lean into that, and that's like, really. I was telling my daughter, I'm so sorry. But guess what? On the other side of this, you really might be able to critically think, and that really is going to be something that is so needed in society today, and you'll really be able to help people. I'm happy for you. Others, eyes off me, onto you. Anything else? I know Christine's like, we got to go. Sort of. Dave's already left. Oh, he's back. I think that's why we're friends. Yes.
So would you say we need to limit technology? We need to...
That we need to limit?
Yeah, technology, like iPads, iPods, you know, like I have two daughters. One is 5 years old, another is 15. So we have, you know, like 5 computers for 4 people. We have 2 iPads, and I'm sure it will... I mean, my husband's a scientist, I'm a scientist. We have so much technology.
Yeah.
So would you say we should kind of really...
Limit it?
Like...
Really and truly?
Get rid of it, or just like...
No.
Like, nope. What would be normal?
I think that, no, it's not. If my opinion is this, don't limit it. It's the world they live in. It's not the technology that's the problem. It's our relationship with it that is the problem. And what I would say, in as often and as much as possible, get real-life relationship involved and then ask this question, how does it make you feel? And it's very interesting, because if you really ask a kid, how does it make you feel? And you can do it at pretty much any time. If you have 3 girls sitting in the back seat of your car, they're doing this, sitting next to each other. Beep, boop, beep, boop, beep. And it's like, you're next to, why don't you just ask the question? They're sitting right by you, you know? And it's like, no, I'll send a text. And it's a group text, you know? I have 5 very different, clearly, personalities in my house. And not any of them are connected to any extent to social media, because it doesn't make them feel good. They don't like the way they feel. I have 1 daughter that has completely gotten herself off of it. She hates it. And you know what? She is my 17-year-old. And so she is old enough probably to go, I so don't like the way it feels. I don't care if I'm left out. And I'll just call them. because she likes talking. And here's the deal. It is a lonely road. In some ways, and in some ways not. Because every single... Okay, for certain, 100%, you are created for relationship. Absolutely. Every person is. That phone, those social media platforms... are not relationship. They're fake. And it's like, and so say it. That's fake. You want to know why? And I will tell you that at times the answer to the how does that make you feel has not worked well for me. And I'm like, no, it must make you feel bad. You know, and sometimes it doesn't. They'll be honest with me and go, well, I kind of like it. Like one of them the other day lied to me. And I was like, well, how did you feel when you did that? And he goes, I felt pretty good. And I was like, no, you should feel horrible. In the relationship stuff, though, I have noticed with my girls and my boys, they would so much rather have a relationship in person than they would over the internet, okay? Boys, guys, the gaming world is huge. And there is relationship in that to a certain extent. But again, it's not real. It's not real. It's not real because they can do what those kids do, and they say hateful and mean things because you're not doing this. Because I'd never say anything hateful and mean to you in person, because I don't think I could. Like, I could behind your back, but I could not do it to your face. Do you know what I mean? And so when you introduce real-life relationship into it, they will naturally opt for that. And it's like, just keep putting it in front of them. We had board games enter our house this summer. There are the coolest board games. Write down this one, Splendor. It's so fun. S-P-L-E-N-D-O-R. Almost anybody can play it. And it's fun. And it's not Monopoly. You know, it goes on forever. There are some really cool strategy games that are out there. Who's got another one you love? What's your favorite board game? Anybody? Like Ticket to Ride? Don't people love that one? What else? Ticket to Ride. Apples to Apples. Dumbest thing. What?
Settlers of Catan.
Settlers of Catan. Another strategy game. Even the goofy one where you put the words on your forehead. And everyone plays that.
And we do it on our phones and we do it at restaurants.
Yes, it's so fun because you're talking to each other. Okay, so when you are doing that and talking to each other, even when your little kid is playing a game, start grooming them. What makes you feel better? Does it feel better when you're on this by yourself? Or does it feel better when you're doing this together? And when they're young, put the words into their mouth. By the way, I love talking with you. I love when I get to hold your hand. Or whatever it is, that there's like actual true life, real relationship going on, because it really does actually feel physically better. It's sort of like the I'm happy for you comment. As I watch, I got to hear my daughter say to her sister, who was wigging out over something, she goes, "You've made it all about you. That's why you're stressed out." This is what she's saying. And she said, "I guarantee you, if you go into whatever this is that you're doing," I think it was a tryout or something, she's like, "Listen, if you just get your eyes off of yourself for a second and just say something nice to the person next to you, you'll feel better." And my other daughter goes, "You sound just like Mom." And I'm sitting there, you know, and I'm like, I am a person with ears. I hear this. And the kid said, "It's true. It works." Those are teenagers. And we all know that you can't, like, get a teenager to say anything that you would like for them to do. So relationship, it's important. You're created for it. So the technology, no. I just don't know how we get rid of it. I'm only saying that because as a mother, I tried for years to go ahead and prepare. And I am telling you, the only thing that has helped them navigate these roads is to have self-worth. Really. Self-worth. Like there is something about them that matters and that they don't have to be defined by this stuff. And therein goes a ton of prayer. Please help me love them. I don't know. It's their heart. Please show me. Give me the words. Open my eyes. What is it? And because it's a bear. It's a bear. I watch my niece. It's just killing my niece. Just killing her. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And then you know what? It doesn't have to be perfect. Again, a perspective. 7 years. I really do. In my mind, I'm like, Joseph, it took a long time. David took a really long time. Didn't change the Lord's plans for any of them. And I'm like, don't let the moment get you off. Stay the course. Stay the course. What else? I have two books. Whose birthday, like mine? Anybody got a birthday around now? Here you go. This one's for you. And who else? Yay! Yes! What is his name?
His name is Finn.
Finn. I wanted Finn. I did. And my daughter named our last child in the carpool line. Called him Jack. Told everybody his name was Jack. I was like, it was Finn. What happened? Oh,
thank you.
He's so cute.
Thank you.
All right, you guys. Thanks for putting up with me.
Thank you.